Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
G, take me away.
Welcome to an episode of The Gary Hour. I'm your host, Gary Levitt. This week I talked to New York comedian Allison Klemp. I was nervous to have her on because she's been called a social justice warrior. And I was just worried that I'd say the wrong thing by mistake. And I think it went okay. I think it went actually very peacefully. Unless she left and she's calling me names right now. But I don't think so. This episode is brought to you by Future Moments, makers of mobile apps for content creation. If you're a filmmaker, musician, podcaster, go to the App Store and search for Future Moments because they probably have an app that makes your life easier. Okay, I hope you enjoy this episode and I hope you get something out of it. Thanks for coming here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I guess I'll start with making myself a little vulnerable. I was a little nervous to have you as a guest because, you know, you're kind of a fighter, you know, and I was like, all right, I better be careful what I say. Not that I feel like I would say anything wrong, but I might, but my intention is always good.
I want you to feel free to speak freely.
Thanks.
That was redundant, but yeah, I'm not gonna, I like you anyway. I'm not gonna like jump over this microphone and attack you.
Oh, well, good. All right. My
it's all about dialogue anyway.
Yeah. Well, you did tell me once that I was mansplaining something.
Was it online though?
No.
Or was it in person?
It was in person.
Also, was I being serious or was I joking around? Sometimes it's hard to tell because I can be very sarcastic.
I think you were serious because it was the only time anyone's ever said that to me, and it really made me think about what I was saying.
I mean, I might have been serious and not, but like, I feel like sometimes people, like, if I'm calling somebody out on something, it's not necessarily because I'm like, hey, fuck you for saying that, but like, especially like, I like you, and like, you know, I don't think you're an asshole, and I don't think that do things, like, maliciously.
Right.
You know what I mean? But it's important for all of us to call each other out and to keep each other accountable, because that's how we get better. You know, like, if I was saying something that, you know, a black friend thought was like, hey, that's kind of racist, and, like, I don't think that you're trying to be racist, but just so you know, it's, like, it's interpreted that way. You know what I mean? Like, that makes me a better person. And that helps me like see the world from like maybe a little bit different perspective, and then like can help me like, you know, take things into account that I maybe wouldn't have before. So I think it's just really important for us to be able to be truthful and honest with each other about that stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting to think. I mean, we're in such a, like a socially conscious time.
Yeah. Well, it's also like it's hard because it's like there's so much like, and that, like I think a big part of like the problem that I'm hoping will fix itself somehow, that it's like, you can't be, there's no room to be wrong anymore. And there's no room for nuance anymore. And there's so much of people just like, oh, he's trash, he's dead, like write him off forever because he said one thing wrong once. And I think that that's really toxic.
Yeah. Mostly online.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like the dialogue online is so different than it would be in person.
Yes.
It is. There's so many arguments. Almost all the social stuff right now has so much nuance to it that isn't really talked about.
Mm-hmm.
It is tricky to navigate. But for me, I always feel like my intention is good.
Mm-hmm.
I never really feel like I'm questioning my intention. So then when someone calls me out on something I might say, which rarely happens actually, then it really kind of makes me question my intention. And I know my intention's good.
Mm-hmm.
So it's strange.
Also, to be totally fair, I may have been overreacting. I don't know what the situation was. Like, I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember either.
But, like, I mean, and that's also a thing that I've had to start, like, working on and, like, kind of checking myself with. Because it's like, you know, maybe it'll happen that, you know, that particular day I have just endured a lot of bullshit, maybe from multiple people, right? And then I've like, and now I'm like brimming, right? With like bullshit up to my eyeballs. And then one person says something that like maybe isn't really that bad.
Right.
But because I'm already like vibrating with rage, it's just like, bah, you know? And then a lot of those times I've like later, I'm like, oh, I took that too far, you know? But
yeah.
So that's like a way that I need to get better. I'm working on that, I think, but time will tell.
Yeah, well, it's hard in New York. There's a lot of stress and stimulus.
There's a lot of reasons to just get real angry, just like right away.
Yeah, the tricky part is to try and not take it out on the wrong person.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Exactly.
It's very easy. There's so often, especially on the subway, where I want to give someone a look if they're being rude or not being conscious of their space. But I don't know what they've been going through.
Right.
Maybe their mom died earlier that day. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe they have a physical ailment or who knows, you know?
I mean, odds are they're a jerk, but...
Yeah, fair. Yeah. Sometimes, yeah, it's hard.
Yeah, it is. We all need a little more country nature in our lives, I think, living here in the city.
Yeah, it is always good to like get out and like... But it's also sometimes so hard. I was just in... I went to California last weekend just to visit family.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like playing with my nephews who are like tiny and adorable and just hanging out at my brother's house in the suburbs, and he just kept apologizing. He was like, oh, I'm so sorry, we're like, we're not doing anything, this is so boring. I'm like, you have no idea,
right?
This is glorious.
Yes,
like you have multiple sitting rooms, you know, like
yeah.
You have a closet just for your towels. I'm in heaven right now, you know.
Yeah, living here in the city, when I go to visit someone, I don't want to do anything.
Yeah.
I want to do nothing.
I'm like, we can stretch out and like all be in a room and no one has to sit on the floor. Do you know how great this is?
I know. It's yeah. We live in a very unique place. People don't realize when you don't live here that it is hard.
Yeah.
You know, it gets really stressful and everyone's overstimulated and over-aggravated.
And you're just like always on top of each other, even in like other big cities. So people usually drive, right? So you have that bubble of your car and this place that's just yours. But we're just like out in the world bumping up against people left and right. And like every opportunity for conflict is there.
Yeah, and personal space.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even get, I mean, you're on the subway, just people are touching you all the time a lot. And you, when you get home, sometimes you just want like 4 feet of space around you just to get that.
Right. Plus, like, I ride a bike now in the city, and it's like, first of all, like, brings up so much road rage. And it's just like, you have to just, like, you hate everyone because you hate all the cars because they're all trying to kill you. And you hate all the pedestrians because they're not looking and just walking out on the road and you're almost killing them. So it's just like, and then, you know, now that's like toxic, right? Because then you like, it kind of like, I realized it was like sort of creating this subconscious idea that like everyone is against me,
right?
And then I would carry that around with me and I would just like have all this hostility and I just like was like defenses up like all the time,
right?
And then I was like, oh, this is really toxic. Like I have to work on this. So that's like another thing.
Yeah, and it's tricky because when you then you end up getting that energy in return,
right? You get what you give.
Yeah, exactly. If I'm walking around really frustrated and angry, then all of a sudden I'm attracting angry people. And then it just cycles.
Right.
Do you have any tools that you use to kind of deal with stress?
Yeah, actually, I am a Buddhist, and I do a chant. I do chanting. So I chant Nam-myoho Renge Kyo.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean? Kill all the people around me?
Yeah, it means everyone must die in Buddhism. No, it means, it roughly translates to, I dedicate myself to the power of the mystic law, which is basically like the power of the universe.
Is that a good power or a negative power?
Yeah, so we teach that when you chant, you open yourself up to your Buddha nature and to your like fullest potential.
Which is like a Zen-like peace?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like it's all like in the... like in the struggle to attaining Buddhahood, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which, like, my particular sect of Buddhism teaches that everybody has the potential to attain Buddhahood in this lifetime, where, like, previous Buddhisms have taught that, like, you know, you have to go through many, many lifetimes in order to get there. But this really puts, like, the emphasis on, like, making the most out of your life now. Like, how do you make the most out of every moment mm-hmm. in your life? And, you know... It's a journey. Sometimes
yeah.
I'm better at it than others, but it's all about just trying to make yourself better.
That's interesting, because with Buddhism, I usually think of not trying to make it better, but just trying to make it more peaceful and serene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, like the ultimate goal is, so it's to make yourself happy and then to make others happy around you
mm-hmm.
and the eventual ripple effect being world peace. So it is like the ultimate thing, but it's also like... like there's a lot of emphasis on like putting your faith into your daily life versus like, it's really easy, you know, to like be a monk and go sit on a mountain and just meditate and feel enlightened. Right. But like, you're not making the world a better place by doing that.
Even though your energy is going out.
Yeah. But it's because you're isolated.
Right. Right.
And you're not connecting with other people and you're not spreading it.
Yeah.
And it's all about like, because it's like kind of selfish in that way. It's like, yeah, you feel good, but like, what are you really doing?
Right.
So it's like, how do you, and I mean, like the Buddhism has helped a lot. Like I am definitely a much better, more introspective person than I ever was before I started.
How long
doing
have you
that.
Been practicing?
About like 3.5 years.
And you meditate every day?
Yeah.
You do?
Supposed to do every morning and every evening, but mm-hmm. sometimes evenings are hard.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I would imagine if you do it before sleeping, you get a better sleep.
Yeah, that definitely does help. And like sometimes I'll do it just like a very like short amount, just to be like, okay, I'm gonna like do this and like direct my like, you know, you always chant like towards something and make goals and determinations. It's
with
like very
with an intention.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And so it's, you know, sometimes it's just like, don't oversleep tomorrow, like don't oversleep tomorrow and get fired. You know,
right?
So it's like sometimes it's like very simple, but mm-hmm. and then sometimes it's like a lot bigger.
Yeah, I've had a lot of Buddhism in my life. My dad was actually living in a Buddhist monastery.
Really?
On 112th, I forget, around 108th or 112th.
Wow.
Yeah, he was studying to be ordained as a Buddhist minister, and as a kid, I lived there with him for a while.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Are you from the city?
From Long Island.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of Buddhism for a while in my life.
Do you know what kind of Buddhism?
It was Zen, Japanese.
Zen Buddhism?
Yeah.
Okay, very cool.
Mm-hmm. But I've actually done, you know about Vipassana? The 10-day silent meditation retreats?
No.
I did that, and then I did a 3-day, but it's basically, it's totally free.
Okay.
I'm going to sound like a commercial now.
Yeah.
But anyone can go. They always fill up, but they're all over the world, and they feed you and house you.
Wow.
And it's just total silence for 10 days.
Is that here or like elsewhere?
Everywhere.
Okay.
The closest one here is in Massachusetts.
And you did a 10-day one?
I did a 10-day, then I did a 3-day.
How old were you when you did these?
When I did the 10-day, I think I was like 25, and then I did the 3-day about 6 months ago.
Oh, wow.
And the 3-day was actually... I found it kind of frustrating because on the third day, I was so not zen. I was like, I'm getting out tomorrow. I can't wait to get out. And I couldn't get any deeper.
Yeah.
But with the 10-day, you give up.
Right.
You know, you're just, all right, I'm here for 10 days.
Like relinquish yourself to it.
Yeah. And you just get deeper and deeper and deeper. And it's so nice. I still say it's the only vacation I've ever taken.
Interesting.
Like where you actually vacate your life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's very cool.
Yeah, I would recommend it to anybody.
Yeah.
It's pretty great. You know, people always say, I can't get away for 10 days, but you can.
You can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's good you found some tools because we really need them living here.
Yeah. It really is so necessary. I remember there was like some time like after I moved here, there was a New Yorker cover story that was like, do you live in New York because you're anxious or are you anxious because you live in New York?
What is the answer to that?
I don't know. I didn't finish it, but I think they feed each other.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
So you gravitated towards Buddhism, but in reading up on you, you went to Catholic school in Las Vegas?
Yeah.
Which sounds like a total anomaly.
Yeah. Well, not if you remember that the mafia used to run Vegas back in the 50s.
Oh, right.
So, basically, like, this is not, like, the official story, but basically the mob started my high school because there were all these Italian mobsters in the middle of the desert, and they wanted somewhere to send their kids.
And it's Catholic school?
Mm-hmm. It's the only Catholic high school in Las Vegas.
So wait a minute. They're mafia, but they're Catholic?
Italians, baby.
Right.
Yeah.
Seems like the lifestyle would get in the way of the religion somehow.
No, that's the beauty of Catholicism. As long as you go to church on Sunday and ask God for forgiveness, all's good.
Right. And that's how the evangelicals support Trump, isn't it? Not to get political.
I mean, yes, but that is just like a complete looking the other way. Evangelical and Catholic are different. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So Catholic school in Las Vegas. And you moved around a lot, right?
Moved around a lot. And I'm also not Catholic, for the record. Like, did not grow up with, like, religion.
Okay. Like, did they teach it in the school?
Yeah. I mean, like, I grew up, like, so I was born in Virginia, moved to Wisconsin when I was a baby, moved to Memphis, Tennessee when I was, like, 6 or 7, and then moved to Vegas when I was 13. So, like, in Memphis, it's, like, everybody's Baptist.
Uh-huh.
Everybody's Southern Baptist. And then also, we lived right next to the Jewish neighborhood, which ironically is called Germantown. True.
They can't leave.
Yeah. Jews are big into remembering. So it was like, there's actually a lot of Jewish kids in my school there. So that was kind of, and everybody got along. It was great, you know. So I had a lot of like that kind of, and like I was, when I was a teenager, I wanted to be Jewish so bad because I had so many Jewish friends. And, like, it's right around 13, so everybody's having, like, their bar mitzvahs and their bat mitzvahs. And I was like, this is so cool. Like,
right, but you have a sweet 16, right?
I didn't really have one.
Okay.
I didn't really have, like, I, like, in, like, somewhat influence of just, like, religion being around me, but not in my family.
Why were your parents moving around so much?
My dad's job just kind of shifted. He, when I was born, he was working for Miller Beer.
Mm-hmm.
And he was based in D.C. He's, like, a lobbyist. And then they moved him to Milwaukee to the headquarters. And then he got laid off because of new president came in to the company and like laid off all the executives, and then he started working for Harrah's Casino, which at the time was headquartered in Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually this casino company looked at themselves and they were like, hey, we're a casino company and we're headquartered in a state where gambling is illegal.
Right.
Maybe we should move to Las Vegas. So they moved.
Brilliant.
So they moved the company to Vegas. I was super pissed about it.
You're moving at 13.
Moving at 13 sucks. And, like, nobody asked me. Mm-hmm. And my dad's, like, beat was, like, he worked, like, the riverboat casinos in the Midwest.
Okay.
So it was, like, he was, like, going to, like, St. Louis a lot. And, like, we lived in Memphis. So it was, like, easy. He could, like, go up for a meeting, come home same day. It was, like, not a problem. But now we're moving across the country. And he's, like, still traveling to the Midwest. So it's, like, shitty, like, didn't make sense for my dad, really. And it definitely sucked for me because, like, I was doing very well in Memphis. I was like honor roll student, I was in music, I was a cheerleader, I was popular, like, mm-hmm. I was on the homecoming court, like, I was doing very well.
Yeah,
you know, I was like in gymnastics, I was like, you know, and then we moved and I just like hated everybody and everything. And I mean, I still like did fine, but it wasn't like, you know, it sucks being like the new kid at 13. It's like a rough
A rough time, yeah, because everyone's kind of already established.
Mm-hmm.
Did you start to act out to your parents?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah, I was not fun. It was not fun for them, I can't imagine. I mean, I would, like, when I was, like, 15, I took car out joyriding and, like, crashed it. And,
nice.
Like, crashed a few cars that did not belong to me.
Before you had a license?
The one before I had a license, and then, like, they made me wait, like, longer to get my license because of that. And then
so you basically stole their car.
Yeah, I mean, like, they had bought it. It was, like, an old car. They had bought it from, like, an old lady for me when I did turn 16, it was like for me to learn on, and it would have been my car.
Right.
So in my mind, I was like, well, this is basically my car. Like,
yeah.
I can handle it. And then I was like, oh, I can't handle it.
Did you total it?
Yeah. Because it was like the amount of damage was like more than what they had paid for the car.
Right, right.
Because they had gotten like a really good deal on
it. What did you hit?
Another car.
Oh, you smashed another car?
Yeah.
How long were you driving for it?
Very short period of
time. No. Like, it's like your 7-minute joyride.
Yeah, it basically. And just to make it perfect, there was like a police station like right in front of where I had done it. So I was didn't have like my like braking coordination wasn't like super down. So yeah. I was braking and then I didn't brake enough. Basically, yeah.
Yeah, and every car's a little different with the brake.
Yeah, and I was 15 and doing it alone, so you know,
nothing to compare it to.
A lot of factors, you know.
Yeah,
I was like, this is different than the bumper cars.
So when you moved from Memphis, then they put you in a Catholic school in Las Vegas.
I was in eighth grade at a public school, mm-hmm. and I was a cheerleader there, and then I got suspended for fighting with another cheerleader.
What were you fighting over?
She was talking shit, and I challenged her.
Yeah.
Basically, but, like, she was, like, it was, like, you know, we were, like, friends, and we'd been, like, fighting for, like, 2 weeks, and, like, blah, blah, like, Valerie, blah, blah, like, talking shit.
Uh-huh.
I don't even remember what about, because who cares? And I just remember it was before English class one day. It was, like, before class had started, and she was, like, very loudly, like, obviously talking shit about me. Mm-hmm. And so I walked over, and I was, like, Valerie, if you have something to say to me, say it to my face.
Uh-huh.
And then, like, she shoved me, and then I shoved her back, and then she shoved me, like, really hard, and I fell backwards into a trash can that was behind me, and then that just, like, began a fight. And I was still very upset about this, because I, like, specifically did not fight back, because I did not want to get suspended and get kicked off cheerleading. That was, like, very important to me.
Right, right.
And so I was just, like, blocking her shots and just, like, trying to get her off of me to stop the fight. And then I got suspended anyway, because they were like, we have a zero tolerance policy. And I'm like, but that's not fair. Like, mm-hmm. She just started fighting me. Like, right. What am I supposed to do? Not defend myself? Like, just let her hit me in the face? Just, like, let her scratch my face? Like, mm-hmm. What? And they were just like, oh, well, just because you were involved in the fight. And I was like, okay, so if I was, like, a 90-pound weakling and someone shoved me into a locker, would I get suspended? And they were like, no, that's different. And I'm like, that's not different. And I was just, that was, like, I feel like that was, like, my first time I felt, like, an injustice had been done.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Against me. And I was just like, but this isn't fair, you know?
Because now you kind of call out a lot of injustices.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was your first.
Yeah. And maybe, just maybe why I remember it so vividly.
Right.
But yeah. And then that happened. And then also I got a B in math class. And my parents got very nervous about the trajectory I was on. So they sent me to Catholic school to, like, shape me up.
Was it a lot more strict?
I mean,
you weren't allowed to beat kids at this point, right? Because I know for a while they were.
What do you mean?
Catholic.
Oh, beat kids?
Yeah.
No, yeah, they had stopped hitting. I mean, it wasn't, like, super strict. It was a little bit, like, same shit, different school, because mm-hmm. It was a lot of kids that were wealthier than I was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, we weren't poor.
Mm-hmm.
We were very middle class, you know, like, we did well, but
sweet casino money.
Yeah. plus it was like during the real estate boom, and my mom got like really into like flipping houses and
oh, cool.
stuff like that, you know. Like we did fine, but mm-hmm. like certainly like my parents both grew up like poor.
Mm-hmm.
And like my mom is very savvy financially, and like that did not pass down. But so she was always like very smart about
you didn't get
like,
that gene.
No, she really tried.
Do you have any brothers or sisters?
Yeah, I have two brothers.
Oh, okay, so they were with you along this whole journey?
Yeah, so my older brother is 6 years older, and he graduated. He basically graduated high school right before we moved.
Mm-hmm.
And then my little brother was like 2 years younger, so he was just like kind of like young enough that it wasn't like he did well in Vegas, and he still lives there actually. You know, but
so when you go back to visit your family, you go to Vegas?
I go all over because we're all spread out. My mom and dad got divorced after high school. Mm-hmm. And so my mom
lost the marriage in a gamble.
Yeah, in a bad bet. The house always wins. So my mom's in Colorado, my dad and my little brother in Vegas, and then my older brother and like his family that he created are in San Francisco.
I've only been to Vegas a couple times, but it seems like such a unique place to grow up.
Yeah, it is and it isn't. I mean, like most of like the people who live there, it's like you're not really like on the strip that much unless mm-hmm. you work there, which I guess a lot of people do. But it's just like very suburban. It's just like suburban sprawl. And in that way, it's like, I feel like very similar to a lot of places, but also there are slot machines in every gas station and every supermarket right. and like all of the movie theaters and the restaurants and like a lot of the stuff to do are attached to casinos.
Yeah.
You know, like.
So you must see a lot of people addicted to gambling, down and out kind of.
Probably. I mean, like I was young enough, I think, that I was sort of sheltered from mm-hmm. that stuff.
Right.
I feel like. Like, if I lived there now, you know, I feel like I would be a lot more attuned to that because it would be people that I know going through that stuff. But, like, when you're 16, right. it's like, oh, there's all this cool stuff to do, but I can't do any of it, you know?
Right, yeah. And it's always strange living in a place where the big industry is tourism.
Yeah.
It's so strange. I've been spending a lot of time in Times Square.
Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And it's just so bizarre to just see all these people walking around and this is what they think New York is.
Right. But it's also like, it's funny because like I'm like used to that because that's like what it is in mm-hmm. Vegas, right? And it's,
but there's so much more.
There's so much more. Right. But it's also like you have to appreciate like, and then so after I spent some time living in Breckenridge, Colorado, which mm-hmm. is like where I really kind of consider my home to be. But like my family, like we had a second home out there for like a while. So had a lot of like family vacations out there, like Christmases. And then like when I moved out there, that was like the first place where I really felt like these are my people. This is my home. I feel
yeah
good here.
I could see your personality fitting in more with Breckenridge than Vegas.
That was kind of like where I figured out who I was. Mm-hmm. And that was also like when I started doing stand-up. So there's like a lot of like my life kind of converged at that point.
Yeah, that must have felt good.
Yeah, it was nice. And then I moved here and like fucking ruined all that. But I was like, I'm happy. I should leave. But like that's also like it's a ski town. And it's like, so it's a resort and it's like very dependent on tourism. Yeah. And so like just so much of my life has been in places where it's like we need the tourist, and like New York is like so many industries and so many mm-hmm. things, and it's not just the tourism, but yeah. obviously it's a huge thing, and definitely Times Square is just like the furnace where it's all birthed, you know?
Yeah, it's intense.
And like, but it's just like you have to appreciate them even though it's just like the worst sometimes, yeah. you know? And then I try to think about like, I like really force myself to think about, okay, remember the first time you came to New York and like how amazing it all seemed, and like you probably like were doing all of these things that piss you off now, you know?
Right. See, it's weird because I grew up around the city. Mm-hmm. Like I was coming into the city as a kid, and then when I left the city, every other city that I've been to in the States is just less.
Yeah.
And in a way that's good, but mostly I think it's bad.
Yeah. I feel kind of bad for, and at least you were like on Long Island, so you had like some semblance of like normalcy.
No.
No?
Long Island is not, it's not. There's so much.
Well, in the sense that you have like yards and stuff.
Right. Yeah.
I guess.
But talk about dysfunctional people.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone, there's a lot of bickering. There's a lot of racism, classism, mm-hmm. and there's nothing for kids to do there.
Mm.
That's where you would literally hang out in a diner.
Right.
Or a mall.
Malls, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of towns on Long Island don't even have sidewalks. It's such a driving place.
Mm, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's strange. Strange place to be.
Yeah. Yeah, that must be hard to be a kid. And that's also probably, honestly, why the opiate problem is so bad there, right?
Yeah.
Because it's like, those kinds of things always are the worst in places mm-hmm. where there's nothing to do.
Yeah, when there's lack of hope.
Right. Yeah. And people just get bored mm-hmm. and then you start doing that.
Which is strange because it's really just a train ride away from New York City.
Yeah.
You know, for most of Long Island, you can easily be in New York City and have a totally different life.
Right.
But most of them, a lot of them don't.
It's crazy. But yeah, like if you're growing up with New York, or like if you, like kids who grow up like in Manhattan, like mm-hmm. can you imagine? You know, and it's just like, yeah, like what else could, stimulate you if that's like your base level.
Yeah, you probably turn 10 and you're like, ah, I've been there and seen it all.
Right.
Jaded.
Yeah. They're like 10-year-olds are just like smoking and they're just like, whatever. I babysit this kid sometimes. And when I started babysitting him, he was probably like 7. And he was just like, but he lives in like Chelsea, but he's like the most nihilistic kid I had ever met. And like he'd be like playing with something and like it wouldn't go right or, you know, whatever. And he'd just be like, oh, forget it. It doesn't matter. Nothing matters. And I was like, what? You're 7.
Like, wow.
I mean, that's true, but you shouldn't know that yet.
Yeah. Like, he's reading Camus.
And I'm like, you're ahead of your time. He's reading like Christopher Hitchens.
He's an existentialist nihilist. Yeah, I think New York City can actually birth a lot of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what brought you, so you're in Breckenridge, and what, you started stand-up there. What brought you to New York City? Was it to pursue stand-up as a career? Because I imagine not much is going on in Breckenridge as far as like industry.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would be like going down to Denver and stuff. It's like an hour from Denver. But I was always like driven towards New York. That was always the goal. Because I used to do theater. I was went to college for theater. And that was the original dream. And the I came to New York for the first time when I was like 12 and was just like in awe of everything and like loved any TV show that took place in New York, any movie that took place in New York. And I would always like, I remember like the movie Keeping the Faith with Ben Stiller was like, I watched that all the time and just like the stuff was just, I'm like walking around the city and I was just like, yes, that's going to be like me, you know, like whatever. And, I would like jaywalk and be like, I'm practicing for New York. Like,
the freedom we have.
Yes.
Just, we can jaywalk.
Yeah, so I was always like wanting to come here, and then the dream kind of shifted from theater. I mean, I still do acting things like when I can, and you know, that's still part of the dream.
But... So you were attracted to New York for theater and just the culture and all the activity.
Yeah, and then once stand-up kind of like honed in as like, oh no, this is the thing I really want to pursue, it was like, okay, New York. And then I came out here for a month to sort of like test around the city, and it was incredible. Also, I had just gone through like my first real breakup, so it was like, where better to rebound than New York City? And
seriously.
I just like, and it was just like, oh, you can just get drunk until sunrise. And I was just like making out with some dude every night and just like, you know, getting lost in Brooklyn. And like, you know, and this was like before smartphones too. So I was like, I remember I fell asleep on the train drunk and I got off the train. I'm just like crashing with a friend. So like, I don't really know where the fuck I am.
Right. And you have a map in your pocket.
Yeah. I don't have a map in my pocket. I don't have anything. And I'm just like drunk and it's like, people are going to work. It's the morning. And I'm just like I had come to and just like on the sidewalk somewhere in Brooklyn. And I was just like, I don't know any. And I just had to walk, and like no one's awake. Like no one I know is awake.
Yeah.
Because it was like 7 a.m. in New York, so no one I know is up. And then it's like 4 a.m. on the West Coast. Like everyone's already asleep.
Were you scared?
I was terrified, yeah. Because I was just like so lost. And didn't know what kind of neighborhood I was in. I was somewhere deep in Brooklyn.
How old were you at the time?
I was like 23 probably.
Yeah, I try to put myself in the shoes of people that have never, that didn't grow up in New York, and just like visiting it when it's totally all new. It just kind of blows my mind a little bit how overwhelming it probably feels.
Yeah, and I just like, I just walked until I found a train. And then
any train.
I think it was an M train. And and then...
And it's diverted on a different track because they're doing service.
And then I just like took it until I got to Manhattan. And then I was able to figure out how to get back to my original spot.
Nice.
So yeah, that was like that was like terrifying, but like in like a fun kind of way, you know, and like an exhilarating, I'm so alive kind of way.
When you're looking back on it.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was still like a crazy story that would like never happen anywhere else, right? And like I didn't die, so it's a good story. But yeah, and so I did that and I loved it, and then I was like, okay, definitely New York. And then like before I moved here, I sort of got this little like bug in my ear that was kind of like, but maybe you should try LA. Like maybe you should give LA a shot, you know, do a test run there just to make sure. Mm-hmm. Also, like there was like a guy who was kind of like this guy that I had seen on and off again throughout college, who's an actor and like a working actor. And he started like getting into my head that like, I should go out there, because he's like, you look so young and Hollywood is obsessed with youth, like you could do really well here. And I was like, yeah, but I'm like Hollywood obese, so like I don't want to deal with that, you know.
Right.
And I'm like, I feel like in New York I can just like eat bread and still get work, and you know, like
that, just walk it off,
right? Like, and they're like less obsessed with like being fit and whatever. So
this is very it sounds like a very responsible, methodical way to decide your future.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I thought so. So I signed up for a UCB sketch writing class in LA, and I went to go, I was going to crash with a friend for a couple months out there and like take the class and like work at a restaurant and just see how it went.
Do the full experience.
Yeah, just try it out.
Restaurant job and all.
Sure. So then I got a DUI, totaled my car 2 weeks in.
Nice.
And then that
very
kind
LA.
Of, yeah, and then that kind of became... the center focus of the experience. So it's sort of, and I was like, okay, universe, I hear you. I should move to New York.
Yeah.
You know,
I think you made the right decision.
Yeah. And like in retrospect, I wish that I had just come to New York and then I could have like sold my car and had like a good chunk of change when I moved here instead of just like destroying it and also parts of my life in the process.
Yeah.
But you know, I learned a lot about myself and I became a better person through the process. So
was it a culture shock
going to LA or going to New York?
Going to LA or coming to New York from LA?
Not really. I mean, my dad is born and raised in LA and like his whole side of the family is out there, so I've spent a lot of time out there visiting with family and stuff.
LA, I guess from moving around a lot, you're probably able to adjust more than most people.
Yeah, that's also true. I feel like I can kind of adapt to most places. It's just like there wasn't a culture shock. LA was just like very annoying. And for me, it's like, I feel like LA is a great place to visit.
Yeah.
But I don't really want to live there.
Yeah.
I also feel like I probably will end up living there at some point when I'm older. Like if I got a job out there, I would go in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Obviously. But I feel like for me, like California is probably going to be more like a settling down place. And it's like, I'm young-ish. But like at the time, it was like, I'm young, I have energy, I should be in New York. Like that's where,
Yeah, LA's changed a lot with Uber now.
Yeah, this was all pre-Uber. And like if I had had Uber, if I had had, first of all, if what had happened had happened, I probably wouldn't have felt like I needed to drive my car.
Right, yeah.
And also, if I could have just Ubered around instead of having to take the bus for like 2 hours at a time.
Yes.
Like, oh man, my life would have been so different. Yeah. But yeah.
I lived in LA for a little while too.
Yeah. How was that?
About 4 years, and I didn't have a car at first. You cannot live there without a car.
It's so hard.
Yeah. And I lived there in my 20s, and it's just not a place when you're that young, I don't think.
Yeah. It's hard to go out because of the driving thing.
Yeah, the driving thing.
And like, I guess now it must be so different with Uber. Because like back then it was like, cabs were also not really an option. You know?
You would call one. I think it took like 45 minutes for them to show up.
Yeah, and like one time I was out at a bar and it was like, I felt like not that long of a distance really. But like, so I was like doing the responsible thing. I was like, I'm going out drinking. I'm going to get a cab home. This was before I crashed my car. And the cab was like $45.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was just like, that's more than I just spent at this bar.
Hey, you're a light drinker. Yeah, Ubers now, it's pretty cheap. People are Uber pools. People are getting around for three. Mm-hmm. It's so much better now when I go to visit friends there, because we'll go out and just, you know, you take an Uber pool. No one, you're not looking around for parking for 20 minutes.
Right.
No one's worried about driving drunk. Yeah. So you came to New York, you're pursuing stand-up, right? And you're like, forget LA.
Yeah.
I can't be there.
Yeah.
I trashed my car.
I mean, I had some, like, I don't know. It was also,
did you
like,
know anybody here in New York?
Yeah. Well, I had a boyfriend at the time. And I had, like, a few people that I knew, like, from college and stuff who were living out here. But, yeah, I broke up with my boyfriend when I went to LA because we were separating, and then kind of started dating the guy from college again, and that was like very disastrous. And then got back together with the other boyfriend. Mm-hmm. And then decided I was going to move to New York. And then he got into grad school at Columbia. So then I was like, we're fated. So we moved out here like separately but together.
Yeah.
And we actually ended up kind of by chance of fate, ended up living across the street from each other.
Wow.
Which was very convenient. Mm-hmm. And then when we broke up, was very stressful.
Yeah. We used to see each other all the time.
Yeah. Although I actually didn't run into him that often, which was good. I think our schedules were pretty opposite, but mm-hmm. I was scared of running into him all the time.
But it's good to move here knowing somebody at least.
Yes. It was good. I mean, it's weird because like it was good, but at the same time, like I feel like it held me back. Like it definitely held me back from stand up. So we broke up about 6 months into me living here. Mm-hmm. And for those first 6 months, like I wasn't really doing it. Mm-hmm. And like I would go do an open mic and I would go up, you know, fourth from the end and no one would be in the room and it would be terrible.
Sounds like an open mic.
Yeah. But it was like, it was so different. Like doing stand up in Colorado was like so different. It was like so much nicer and easier. And
people are more supportive and nurturing.
People are more supportive. And like I had never really bombed.
Yeah.
And like, you know, like got like good feedback, like kind of from the beginning and, you know, felt like was feeling very good about myself, but I also knew I'm like, oh God, I am going to start bombing though. And I was very eager to bomb at first because I was like, the longer it takes to bomb, the harder it's going to be when it happens.
Right.
And I'm like, I just need to like rip this Band-Aid off, you know? Cause I was like, I know that I'm not God's gift to stand up. Like I know that I'm going to bomb.
Everybody bombs.
Yeah. Like fucking Dave Chappelle bombs. Like I'm like, everybody bombs.
Even with material that kills.
Yeah.
It's very bizarre.
It's yeah. Like Dave Attell has bombed. Like yeah. Everybody's bombed. So, I was like, and then it happened and then it was just like, so, and I was just like, ugh. And I didn't like, because I had the safety net of this boyfriend that mm-hmm. I could like run back to and be like, that was scary and people were mean and, you know, and then I would like kind of like go back to my bunker and then like, it would take me like a few weeks before I would go out again. So I wasn't like really, but I feel like I like look at people, now who are like new or whatever. And it's like, if you don't have any of that, like you kind of just dive in because that's also like how you meet people and how right. you start making friends and building a social network. And I was like very like kind of delayed on all that. And then I started doing more stand up when we broke up. And then very quickly after that, started seeing another stand up comic. Mm-hmm. And so then became very absorbed in that.
Yeah.
And then it was like, but then my whole social environment was like also his social environment. So when we stopped seeing each other, I had to like start all over again. And it was like very hard. So,
yeah. Did it make you want to get away from the whole scene?
Kind of just from like his corner of the scene. But it did make me realize that I was like, I need to not be in a relationship because I was just like, clearly I am not like mature enough to be able to do this in a healthy way. And right. like, and I was like, every time I'm in a relationship, I was just like giving myself over so much to the other person
right.
that I was like not taking care of myself in any way.
Yeah. That's the trick with a relationship.
Yeah. So then I became like very selfish for a couple of years and like really just like focused on myself. And now I'm in a relationship again. And I think I found a balance.
Yeah. It's tricky. It's always a struggle for me. Like, when you're with someone, you kind of rely on them for the nurturing. Mm-hmm. And then if they go away, mm-hmm. you don't know how to give it to yourself.
Right.
And then when you're single, you learn to give yourself the self-nurturing. Mm-hmm. It's tricky. But then if you're with the right person or if you're very self-aware, I'm like, okay, I have to remember who I am in the relationship. Mm-hmm. It's so tricky.
Yeah.
It's a constant balancing beam.
Yeah, it is a constant balance for sure.
Yeah, it's tricky. I remember I was in a long relationship, and when I got out of it, I was in that relationship. I was like, what's the point of going to a museum? I have no one to share it with. Mm. Like that kind of thinking. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, I know, you do it for yourself.
Right.
You know, and I learned to basically be my own person. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's tricky.
To date yourself.
Date myself, yes, yeah. Exactly.
I also feel like that kind of comes with age a lot of the time, because I feel like when I was younger, I used to think that like the idea of eating alone or going to a movie alone were just like the most depressing ideas, and now I love it.
Yeah, you know? Well, I also think having a smartphone changes everything too, because you could be alone, but then you're communicating with a million people.
Yeah, I'm trying to limit that also.
Are you?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
I feel
that's
like good. It's unhealthy.
It definitely is.
I'm trying to like read more physical books and mm-hmm. like do stuff like that. It's kind of like, you know, keep myself a little more grounded.
Yeah, when I'm home, I'm trying to keep the phone in, mm-hmm. in the bedroom, so I'm just not on it.
Mm-hmm. I love the do not disturb function is like my favorite thing on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
It's like if I get so distracted so easily, so like if it buzzes, I'm going to look at it.
Yeah.
You know?
And that ties in with Buddhism, because there's the thing in Buddhism of like living in a state of reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Like we're constantly living in a state. I forget. I'm going to mess up how they wrote it. But
sure.
Constantly living in a state of reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And it leads to misery, is their
mm-hmm.
words.
Mm-hmm.
So with meditation, you're taking a state of action. You know, you're trying to meditate and then all these thoughts are popping into your head.
Mm-hmm.
And what you do, and at least in Vipassana, is... you don't react to them, you observe them.
Mm-hmm.
So then you're taking control and you're living in a state of action and mm-hmm. not reaction. So you know, I might be in a meditation that I'm like, Madonna, Tom Cruise, mm-hmm. like stupid random stuff pops up. And instead of, when is Tom Cruise's birthday? Instead of like going right. there for no reason at all.
I do
like,
want to see that Mission Impossible movie.
Yeah, and you're like, I just thought, okay. That, and then you don't even quantify it or give it a judgment or evaluation. You just go, I just thought of Tom Cruise. Okay, back to the meditation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's kind of a metaphor for the smartphone, I think, because it's all the notifications and... Yeah.
I downloaded this app called Forest.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a productivity app. So it's like you plant a tree and the tree grows. Like, but if you open your phone and like do anything, the tree will die. So it's like you set a timer, right? Uh-huh. So you can change it with the time. So you can say like 30 minutes, right? So it's like basically you're saying like 30 minutes, I'm not going to play with my phone.
You're going to grow your tree.
I'm going to grow my tree.
Yeah.
And then like when the tree grows, you get like coins or whatever. And then when you get a certain amount of coins, then you can like plant a real tree.
Uh-huh.
And like they'll plant like a real tree for like however many trees that you buy.
Oh wow.
With your productivity.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a good thing. I haven't gotten enough productivity points to like plant a tree yet, but I am working on it. My trees keep dying.
You keep killing trees?
I keep killing these trees. And I'm like, oh god, I'm a monster. But yeah, that's been helpful.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So
we're sponsored by Forest, the app.
So download Forest or any similar apps.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow, that's just like I have to like force myself not to do it. But yeah, like that, like stuff you're talking about not being reactionary is mm-hmm. like a goal of mine, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, I feel like I've been working on this in my social media life where mm-hmm. it's just like, hey, I don't have to respond to everything, you know? And it's like, hey, that person, I feel like they're wrong about this, but
right.
I don't have to tell them that I think that they're wrong, and I definitely don't have to try to convince them that
right.
I'm right, you know? And kind of like, I've sort of been starting there, which is like definitely the most toxic area of my life, and just kind of like trying to like pull back.
Yeah.
And just being like, just observing.
Like you put your cursor in the comment field and you start typing, you're like, mm-hmm. nope, not gonna do it.
Nope, just delete and scroll.
Yeah.
Unfollow.
So that kind of probably pulls in your Buddhist practice a little bit.
You're like, yeah.
Okay. You start chanting while you're on Facebook.
Yeah. Well, I do have a rule. I've like made a personal rule that I try not to listen or read any news before I chant.
Oh, that's good.
Because yeah. It just like puts me in such a negative headspace. And then I get so like, and then I just go down rabbit holes of human misery, mm-hmm. you know? And then it's like, and then I'm like, oh, no, I just have to leave. And then I leave with all this terrible energy, and that's how I start my day, and it's not good.
Right. Well, what propels you? I mean, you have a lot of passion,
mm-hmm.
right? So, like, social issues or political issues, what are the things that you feel really passionate about?
Well, as you know, I'm a libtard, mm-hmm. so is how I identify. But yeah, I mean, I guess like, yeah, socially and politically. I mean, my biggest thing is like rape. I'm like really into it.
Pro or against?
Pro. no, I'm anti-rape. Hot take alert. Watch out. I don't like it. I think it's bad. And, you should stop doing it, Gary. I mean, I'm talking about this. No, but just like, I don't know, like a lot of like women's issues,
mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a little typical SJW, just don't have a blog. I can't have my title really because I don't have a blog.
SJW, Social Justice Warrior.
Yeah.
Is it tricky to find the balance between comedy and social justice warrioring?
No, I mean, it's just like, I don't really like think, I mean, I don't really identify as an SJW, but that is just what people call me. Uh-huh. I've always like been very outspoken, and that form has kind of like, I was in high school when 9/11 happened, mm-hmm. and I was in high school when the Iraq War started.
But it wasn't your fault.
I know. But like, that was like kind of when I started like having all these very strong feelings about like what's happening is not right,
yeah.
you know? And I started writing satire articles in my school newspaper. And that was like sort of how I started expressing myself mm-hmm. through comedy. And so I sort of like started developing a comedic voice through like my political beliefs and my like beliefs about social issues. So, I feel like they're just sort of intertwined in a way that, you know, mm-hmm. Kind of can't be undone, because it is like just sort of a big part of like who I am and how I view the world, which is also like how you view the world comes out through your comedy.
Right.
So, I do like, I am trying to like make more of an effort to not, have like my whole set be just like about my vagina, you know? But like, write what you know. So
yeah,
you know, like between a rock and a hard puss.
But like, what? So you know, there's that thing in comedy: tragedy plus time.
Mm-hmm.
You need the time.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people say if you're too emotional about an issue, it's hard to write the jokes about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I notice that with myself. If I read the news and I try to think of funny tweets to write,
right?
If I feel passionate about it, I just end up writing something that's got no funny to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a statement.
Yeah.
And then if I feel less passionate about it, I'm able to make a joke about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just an interesting thing. And that's why I asked if it's hard to balance that passion for social justice with comedy.
Yeah. It definitely makes it trickier. Like what you're talking about, I mm-hmm. identify with like a lot. And part of it is also just like, you know, learning how to temper my emotions about things and like kind of like almost like, I guess, compartmentalizing a bit in a way. Mm-hmm. And like, something like a news story will make me very upset. Right. Mm-hmm. And then I think, okay, but like one of your ambitions is to be like a late night writer. And if you were a late night writer, you would have to write jokes about this
right.
like right now. And you can't like, oh, I I'm having such a hard day because of like what Trump did. Like you can't,
right,
you know, you just have to write the joke.
Yep.
And so you have to be able to like to kind of not react emotionally, kind of
not care that much.
Yeah.
Which is the odd thing.
I mean, but it's like, I feel like it's just like how to like redirect. So like in Buddhism we talk a lot about like turning poison into medicine. And like sort of like taking on challenges and negative obstacles like with like a vigorous joy and like knowing that you'll be able to like turn it around. So I'm kind of trying to apply that perspective to
like, that makes a lot of sense.
Horrible things that are going on. And yeah. Like, literally this is what we try to do with comedy, right? Is like, we're trying to take these horrible things that happen in the world and yeah. like turn them on their face and make people laugh about it. Because if you don't laugh, you're going to cry.
Right.
And that is very true in this day and age. Right. So it's just like just like, it's just like trying to redirect that angry energy, and then I'd be like, okay, but how can we make it funny? So that's the challenge.
Yeah, and that kind of ties into the Vipassana method that I learned, if not reacting, but just observing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you observe the news and don't react to it, mm-hmm. then you can take action and make a funny joke.
Exactly. It all ties together.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
We're getting a theme to this episode.
Yeah. We're going to get zen as fuck.
We're solving our own problems, if not the world's.
Yeah.
So how long have you been in New York City for? How much has it worn you down?
This October will be 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And you think here to stay for a while?
For the foreseeable future.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you've just been practicing Buddhism for 3 years, you said?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's probably good.
Yeah. I was at a breaking point.
And you're dating another comedian.
Yes.
How is that? Because I imagine that would be difficult in a few different ways, of like trying to top each other's jokes or not even being funny, because as a comedian, it's hard to laugh.
Right. It definitely, I've dated comedians before and have slept with many, and it definitely can have like all those challenges, and also like a lot of other challenges of like ego and stuff like that.
Ego of like career stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm, right. You're always kind of in a competition maybe.
Yeah, that can be the case. But my current boyfriend is like very not like a typical male comic in those ways. Like, we have never had jealousy issues with like career stuff. There's like not ego there. We're both like big fans of each other's comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And he is extremely supportive of me. And that is, I think, just very crucial, you know. I mean, in any partner, right? Like, you want to have someone who, you know, wants you to be doing your best and like living your fullest
potential.
For you,
even if it goes against what might be, like you mentioned your boyfriend that was going to Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
When you bombed,
mm-hmm.
he should have said to you, you need to go back up tomorrow.
Right. But he also, I mean, he didn't know.
Right.
You know.
He didn't have those.
He doesn't. And it's like, it is really nice to be able to be with someone who like just gets it, you know, mm-hmm. and you can like if you have a bad set, like they know what that means and they know what that feels like and they know not to like push you in the wrong direction or
mm-hmm.
you know. Yeah, and
so it's really beneficial in that sense.
And I mean, in my particular instance, like, it works amazingly, but it just depends on like who the person is.
Yeah,
you know. And I feel like it can be great, and there's like a bunch of comedy couples that I think are doing pretty well, so mm-hmm. like if you both are like being supportive of each other, it can be magic. But if you're not, then, you know.
Yeah. It could be a constant gnawing,
mm-hmm.
where you get no break.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be tricky. I'm kind of like amazed that you can pull that off.
Oh, thank you. It's also nice because it's like, we can kind of like talk to each other about our jokes, you know, mm-hmm. and like get like pretty honest feedback from each other, you know.
When you say he's not a typical male comic, what do you mean by that?
Oh, I just mean like in like romantic experiences that I've had in the past with male comics, like mostly the ego issue.
Being competitive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is like, I would say the biggest problem, or, you know, just like typical fuckboy shit,
uh-huh.
you know, but he's, you know, he's a good boy. So
he's a good boy.
Yeah.
Nice.
He's very sweet. You know.
And you like his comedy.
Yes.
Do you think you could date someone where you like them as a person, but you didn't like their comedy?
Never.
Right?
Absolutely never. I was, I dated this actor very briefly, and we were like in a show together. This was here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this is not part of what I was originally going to talk about, but it's funny, so I'm going to tell you. So he was bisexual, which is fine, but like, Like, we were, like, hooking up the first time, and then he, like, we were very drunk, and he told me he was bi, and I was like, oh, and I, like, never hooked up with a bi dude before, so I was like, okay, and I was just, like, I have this, like, inner monologue with myself of, like, you're very sex positive, the male bisexual identity is real, like, you've never encountered it before, but here it's in front of you, and, like, now you have to, like, walk the walk, you've been talking the talk, like, okay, right. You know, and I was just like, but it was, like, a little bit like, okay, like, you know.
You're prepping yourself, yeah. Pumping yourself up.
But I was like, what does this mean? Like, is he gonna, like, want me to, and I was like, trying to make like joking around, and I was like, oh, like, so you'd like to get pegged, you know? Uh-huh. And he was like, actually, yeah, I have a strap on at home. And I was like, oh, okay. And I was like, I don't know if I'm ready for that, like, I've never done that before. And I was like, and then I like talked to one of my gay friends about it, and he was like, you should just do it. And I was like, you're right, I should. So I was like, he was like, what if you love it? And I'm like, oh my god, what if I love it? And I was like, oh my god, it would be like really cool to penetrate a man. And I was like, oh my god. I was like yeah. So then, like, by the time I got, like, prepared mentally enough to, like, do that, I was, yeah, like, so annoyed with, like, him as a person, mm-hmm, that I was like, ugh, I don't want to, like, I want to do it, but, like, not to you, uh-huh, you know? And it was, like, he's an actor, and he's, like, you know, we'd, like, do, like, little sketches and stuff, and he wanted to show me, like, a sketch that he had made, like, with his roommates, and he was, like, really, really proud of it, and he showed it to me, and it was, whew, I don't even, like, I couldn't even understand, like, most of it. You know what I mean? It was just like, this isn't, it's like less that it's not funny and more that it just, like, doesn't even make sense, like, at all. Right. And yeah. I was just like, oh no, you know? And then he's like, what did you think? And I was like, I think we should see other people.
Not only do I not like your sketch.
Yeah. And then he would, like, come to my comedy shows, and I was just like, please don't do this. Like, you know? And, like, he came to, like, an all female show, and it was just, like, really weird. And I was just, like, we were not, like, that serious. And then he was started being like, oh, yeah. He was like, I think I should try stand-up. And I'm like, please don't.
Oh, no. Yeah, yeah.
Like, I can't.
Wait, when he told you he was bi, and you said you needed to, you were, like, giving yourself pep talks.
Uh-huh.
Why? Because did it make you feel less attracted to him?
No, I just, like, I didn't know. I had never, to my knowledge, hooked up with a bi guy before.
Oh, so it was, like, all of a sudden you have much more competition.
So that, but I was also, like, I just didn't know, like, if he was going to be wanting, expecting me to do something that I had never done before, or, like, whatever, you know? And I was, right, just like, and I was a little bit like, I don't know. It was just like, it doesn't really matter. Uh-huh. But I was like, I mean, I was also a lot younger, and it was just like, you know, the first time you experience something different, and then,
yeah,
it was the same. And then it was like, oh, like, the bisexuality was, like, not even ever an issue. I was like, it was a bigger issue that you were 27 years old and your mom pays your rent. And I was like, there were, like, a lot of, like, boner killer, right, moments. And I was just like, you don't pay your own rent, you don't work because of your anxiety,
and you're writing bad sketches,
yeah, and you're writing, and you're not funny on top of all of that,
right,
like,
right.
If you were, like, really funny, like, that could make up for, like, your mom pays your rent, maybe,
right.
You know what I mean?
Like, at least there's hope,
right, exactly. But it's like, oh man, where is this going? Like,
yeah,
ugh.
I guess, yeah, that's a big, if he tells you he's bisexual, all of a sudden there's like, oh, I'm like, can I even satisfy him?
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, right. It's like, do I have the, you know, and also, like, yeah, like, yeah, now I have to, like, compete with dudes also, like,
right, yeah,
you know, it's just like, so, but I've always, like, I feel like that's, like, a thing, at least with, like, women, where it's like this, like, fear of that, like, you know, a guy that you'll be dating will turn out to be gay, you know, mm-hmm, like, and if, obviously this is, like, not real or true, but, like, I think the thinking there is, like, oh, he turned him gay, you know?
Uh-huh, right.
But I've always felt like, I'm like, I would so much rather my boyfriend, like, if my boyfriend cheated on me with a guy,
yeah,
like, if he was going to cheat on me, I would rather him cheat on me with a guy than with a girl, right? Because it's like, oh, well, if you are gay and you've been hiding that and that's who you are,
right,
then I will never satisfy you and we will never be able to, like, really be together, right? So it's like,
that's interesting, because I
feel
like,
go live your truth, right? But it's like, if you just, like, want another woman, then it's like, I failed as a woman, you know?
Right. That's traditionally men's take.
Mm-hmm.
Men are like, oh, if my girlfriend wants to be with another girl, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's not intimidating. But I feel like with women, a lot of times it's, they become unattracted to the male, because then the male is emasculated.
Right.
If he's attracted to men.
Right. Which is why it's hard for male bisexuals.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's that stigma.
There is that stigma.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's different for some reason.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if it's societal or primal.
I feel like we have, I don't know, but I feel like we have such a toxic, like, male identity issue in this mm-hmm. country, especially, I guess, like, all over, really. But, like, the idea of, like, what it means to be a man, mm-hmm. you know, is so singular in a lot of ways.
Which is what, like, provider,
you know, like, non-emotional. Strong, yeah, like, don't cry, like, all this stuff.
Yeah.
Actually, when I was with my brother this last weekend, he, like, his, one of his sons is 5, and he's, like, very emotional right now. He's just, like...
Little snowflake.
He gets, like, really upset by, like, little things.
He's five.
He's, like, learning what emotions are, right?
Right.
So it's, like, he's just being very pouty. And then he was crying about something that was, like... His brother was playing with his toy or something, right? And he's right. just, like, bawling. And my brother's, like, talking to him and, like, trying to, like, calm him down. And
he told him, stop being a little bitch.
Yes. And I was like, good. That is the Klimt way.
Make him a man.
He said this, and I really enjoyed it. He said, it's okay to cry about things that matter. He's like, but this is a little thing, and you don't need to cry about this.
Oh, wow.
And I was just like, I really like that he said that, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, good, okay. You know, not that I think, like, my brother's, like, raising his sons to be monsters or anything, but it's just, like, it's good to hear that.
Yeah.
And it's good to hear that directed at a little boy, because it really is, like, all about, because I work at a preschool part-time, and I'm, like, thinking a lot about, like, the messages that we are kind of, like, subconsciously giving to children when they're young.
Mm-hmm.
And really trying to be very, like, self-conscious about, like, not kind of, like, reinforcing old ideas.
Right.
Because they're fresh and have all this hope and will save us from ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much that goes into the nurturing of a kid. I mean, the way they're raised, the stuff they see in movies mm-hmm. here. It's so, even It's a Wonderful Life, which is, like, a classic American movie.
Mm-hmm.
I watched it over the Christmas, and it's really messed up. Like, he kind of grabs Mary, Jimmy Stewart grabs mm-hmm. her, and it's almost like he's assaulting her.
Right.
You know, and her big hope is to just have a house with kids, and not that there's anything wrong with that, but, you know, it's this stuff goes into the nurturing of kids.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think society is changing really rapidly these days.
Yeah. Thanks to the internet.
Yeah. And SJWs.
Yeah, like myself. You're welcome, America. No, I don't know. I feel like it's also like it's changing, but it's not. There's just, like, such a strong resistance to progress. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've noticed.
Yeah, people don't like change.
No, it's scary.
Yeah, it is. And I feel like, just to wrap this up, there's kind of you're in kind of a dichotomy, because you want to change the world and you want to make your impact on it, but then you're also practicing Buddhist to kind of be Zen about the things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my problem with Buddhism too, is like, well, I want to be in and of the world,
mm-hmm.
where Buddhism is kind of just like being in the world but not of it. Like, the world just kind of washes over you and you are serene all about it.
Mm, I guess that's one way of looking at it. That's not, like, how I view it
mm-hmm.
exactly, but I like, my view of Buddhism is, like, more active, I mm-hmm. guess, than, like, not being, like, ruffled so much by things. Like we strive for, like, an absolute happiness, which is like, no matter what hits you, like, your resolve is strong and, like, you can stand up to it and you can, like, forge on, versus, like, relative happiness, which is, like, a good thing happens and I'm happy, and then a bad thing happens and I'm sad.
Right.
You know, so it's just like that, like, kind of like that, like, inner resolve to, like, be able to just, like, handle whatever hits you and to, like, be joyous while you fight through it.
I guess an example would be, okay, so say you're on the subway
mm-hmm.
and there's someone just being like, hey, get out of my way, I'm moving here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Buddhist approach would be like, just be Zen about it
mm-hmm.
and don't say anything and just let that frustration wash over you.
Mm-hmm.
And then another action would be like, hey, shut up and sit down, you're disturbing everybody.
Right.
So which one do you do?
I feel like in that instance, it would be like to just let them be and to just let them have their space, because mm-hmm. he's being, like, loud and disruptive, but he's not actually hurting anybody, versus, like, if he actually was, like, threatening harm to somebody, then, like, that would be a moment to kind of, like, stand up and say something.
Right. Yeah. All my all my examples of frustration take place in the subway.
Yeah, I mean, that's where most of my examples of frustration happen as well. I mean, also, not to act like I'm like some, you know, Buddha belly person. Like, I screamed at an MTA person from across the platform last night. Is like, screamed at him, and he was not the person who was the reason for my frustration. He was just the guy sweeping up the platform.
Oh, no.
But he was representing the MTA.
Right.
And I just was very angry. So
you ever just scream your chance at someone?
Yeah, the karma's going to hit me later. I'm going to step in dog shit on the way home.
I feel like we solved nothing today.
Excellent.
But there is a lot of food for thought.
I feel closer to you now.
That's true. We solved that. Yeah. And I'm no longer scared of you.
Good.
That's good. Thanks a lot for talking to us.
Thank you so much.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.